Unit 10, Administration and Economy under Tipu, page 35. Structure 10.0, Objectives 10.1, Introduction 10.2, Administration 10.2.1, Central Administration 10.2.2, Provincial Administration 10.2.3, Revenue 10.2.4, Finance 10.2.5, Judicial 10.2.6, Military 10.3, Social Reforms 10.4, Religious Policies 10.5, Economy 10.5.1, Agriculture 10.5.2, Trade and Commerce 10.5.3, Industry 10.6, Summary of the Unit 10.7, Self-Assessment Questions 10.8, Suggested Books for Further Study. Page 36. 10.0, Objectives. The main objectives of this unit is to know: Point 1, about the administration under Tipu Sultan. Point 2, the social, religious and economic conditions which existed during Tipu Sultan. Point 3, the new reforms introduced by Tipu Sultan. 10.1, Introduction. Tipu Sultan was an autocrat like other Indian rulers. He consulted his chief civil and military officer on important matters, but the final decision always rested in him. He was the supreme legislature, judiciary, and executive authority in his kingdom. He was his own foreign minister. He was also his own commander-in-chief and acted as the highest court of appeal in his kingdom. More significant than Tipu's zeal was his creative vision, which aimed at bringing about a social change in the condition of the people, in the improvement of the economic life of the masses, and in the enhancement of the prestige and prosperity of his state. His reforming zeal touched almost every department of life, including coinage and calendar, weights and measures, banking and finance, trade and commerce, agriculture and industry, morals and manners, and social and cultural life. He built up an efficient system of administration and was almost the first Indian ruler to apply Western techniques in the heart of government. His innovative measures and dynamic policies made Mysore gain almost international importance in his times. All this would have been possible had he not been progressive and secular in his character. Even in the absence of any constitutional checks in his authority, Tipu did not behave like an irresponsible ruler. He had a high sense of duty to his office and believed that his subjects constitute a unique trust held for God, the real master. He took great care to mark for the welfare and happiness of the people. 10.2, Administration. Many scholars and historians have analyzed various aspects of the system of administration which existed in Tipu's Mysore state. This has been done on the basis of feudal structure which existed prior to this. More than his father, Tipu provided a strong centralized administrative structure to Mysore, which helped him to integrate more geographical regions. He gave equal prominence to all fields of administration like civil, military, judicial, and trade and commerce. Page 37. Tipu called his government Sarkar-e-Khudadad, governing given by God. But this did not mean that it was meant only for the Muslims, while the Sharia law was applicable to the Muslims. The Hindus were governed by their own laws. Tipu Sultan's zeal, far innovation and improvement prompted him to introduce a number of changes in the system of government he inherited from his father. He borrowed from Great Mughal and was also influenced by Western institutions which were established by the European companies in India. According to H.H. Dodwell, Tipu was the first Indian sovereign to seek to apply Western methods to his administration. 10.2.1 The Central Administration. Tipu favored central administration, and in order to accomplish his ideas, he divided his government into 7 important departments, each under a Mir Asif, who was directly responsible to the Sultan. Each department under the charge of a chief administrator, assisted by a number of subordinate officers who constituted a board. However, the final decision in all important matters rested with the Sultan. The 7 departments were, number 1, Revenue and Finance, Mir Asif Kacheri. Number 2, the Military, Mir Miran Kacheri. Number 3, the Jumra, Indigenous Military or Mir Miran. Number 4, the Ordnance and Garrison Department, Mir Sudur Kacheri. Number 5, the Commerce, Malik Uttajjar Kacheri. Number 6, the Marine Department, Mir Yem Kacheri. Number 7, the Treasury and Mint Department, Mir Khazan Kacheri. There were the 7 principal departments, but there was one other department which was equally important. This was the Department of Post and Intelligence under a Daroga, stationed at Srirangapatna. Besides these, there are some minor departments like Public Buildings Department, the Cattle Department and Department of Temples, etc. Each department was guided by a consultant committee headed by a chief officers. These committees used to hold meetings and discuss about the problems of their departments. After such discussions, important resolutions were put to vote. Then the reports were submitted to Tipu Sultan. After going through the reports, Tipu would use his discretion and give consent for their implementation. This was a clear evidence for Tipu's popular administration. The most important officer in the kingdom was Mir Sadiq, the Huzur Diwan. Next to him was Purnaya, who was not only the head of Mir Miran department, but was also a member of Mir Asif board. The other important officials were Mir Samani in charge of royal household, Qiladar in charge of Srirangapatna fort, Kotwal, law and order, Qazi, etc. 10.2.2 Provincial Administration. Tipu Sultan paid great attention to the administration of the provinces in his kingdom. For convenience of his administration, he divided the whole of his territory into 3 parts. They were the coastal territories, the hilly region, and the plain country. Through this decentralized power, he involved the people of all parts of country in the administration. Page 38. After the conclusion of the Treaty of Mangalore, Tipu divided his kingdom into 7 provinces, and later their number was increased to 17. In 1794, there were 37 provinces. He appointed to every province 2 asifs, civil governors, 2 or 3, sometimes more, faujdars, military governors, as checks on one another. The Asifs in particular had 6 shahidstidars. Each of them had 6 deputies, writers for every districts, in which provinces, and each district had 1 amildar, 2 shahidstidar, and 1 registrar, exclusive of village accountants for their interior management. Each province was in charge of an Asif or civil governor. The Asif was in charge of the revenue, while the Faujdar was responsible for the maintenance of law and order. Neither was to interfere in the affairs of others. The separation of power was introduced in order to prevent the Asif or Faujdars from being too powerful. In some provinces, there were 2 Asifs, one being the senior Asif and the other his deputy. The Asifs had under them shayistidars, clerks, peons and copyists to help them with the administration of the provinces. After 1799, the post of the Asif was abolished, but that of the Faujdars retained. The provinces were further divided into Amildar, provinces or districts. Generally, one Asif province contained from 30 to 40 villages. It was under an Amil, also called as Amildars, who had his subordinates as Tarafdars, Shayistidars, clerks and peons. As head of the districts, the Amildar's duty was to look after the welfare of the peasants, to promote agriculture and to supply commodities with stores and provisions. They were responsible for their respective departments to which they sent their accounts and their collections. The governor organized and posted the army and managed the finance. He was not allowed to intervene the administration of justice or the levy of taxes. The governor was appointed on certain conditions. A person of high social status was chosen so that he might look after the soldiers, servants, arriers and clerks. He should take pains to fulfill the expectations of the people. He should exercise the greatest circumceptions in military and revenue matters. He was further instructed to fulfill the needs of the people and the merchants without distinction. He was not given authority over judicial affairs. These provinces were kept under the supervision of the center. The revenue officials, though under the immediate control of the governor, were supervised by the Ministry of Finance at the central, which received and examined regular and detailed statements regarding income and expenditure in every province. The governor were officers posted to their charges by the Sultan and transferred, removed or punished at his pleasure. For the administration of the district, the principal department was the Sadar-us-Sudar, which was located at the capital headed by the Diwan and his subordinates. Page 39. The provincial government was a replica of the central government. The governors were directly responsible to the central government for proper administration of the province. The people of the province had rights to appeal to the Sultan against oppression of the governors, and this was the greatest check on the tyranny of the governors. The provincial governors enjoyed considerable freedom in their provinces. There were certain checks which always controlled them. The first was their own fear of becoming unpopular in the province. Secondly, the governors could always be removed from their maladministration, and the people were given the right of approaching the Sultan against the governors. Lastly, the Sultan had always the right of transferring or removing any governor whom he disliked. Tipu invented new names and terms in all departments and affairs, such as Ghaffar Kacheri, Rahman Kacheri, Ilahi Kacheri, and so on. Orders from Srirangapatna were sent in three languages, Persian, Kannada, and Marathi. Tipu's government was highly centralized. He sent his provincial and district officers detailed instructions which they required to follow. The local government under Tipu was as it existed in the past. Each village had a headman known as a Patel. The village council was an important part of local administration. The provincial government was a replica of the central government, the governors representing the Sultan as the head of the administration. Control for the center was lacking, especially over distant provinces. The local officials were mostly Hindus and they played an important role in the rural life of the period. The unit of administration continued to be the village with the headman and the accountant. 10.2.3 The Revenue. Tipu's revenue policy was much the same as it had been under Hyder Ali, except that he introduced greater efficiency into it. He had acquired great knowledge in revenue affairs while managing the districts of Malavalli, Kananur, Dharmapuri and Pennagram, which his father had granted him as jagirs in 1760 and which under him became prosperous. This early experience proved to him very useful when he became the ruler of Mysore. The most important source of income to the government was the land revenue, which still continued to be the mainstay of finances. The lands were divided according to their fertility. First, Polaj was the land which was annually cultivated for each crop in succession and was never allowed to be lie fallow. Secondly, Parauti was the land which was left out for cultivation for a time so that it might regain its fertility. Thirdly, Banjar, land which was uncultivated for 5 years or more. Lastly, Chachar, land which had remained fallow for 3 or 4 years. Page 40. The principal land tenure in Mysore were first the Kadayam lands, either dry, wet or garden, which were held by the Rayats from the Sarkar for money rents. Secondly, the Baltais land, which were wet and garden lands suited under artificial reservoirs and canals. Thirdly, Kesmaguta, where the lands which, having declined in their revenues or became depopulated and waste, were given to Rayats on a fixed money rent forever. Fourthly, Jodi village and lands were those which were granted by the government to Brahmins and other holy persons. Lastly, the Shravan were the waste lands granted to individuals undertaking to reclaim them from jungles and bring them under permanent cultivation. The principle of land tenure was that a tenant and his hire occupied land so long as they cultivated it and paid rent. But if they failed to fulfill these conditions, the government was entitled to transfer the land to the other tenant. Mysore, with its small area of 29,400 square miles, has a variety of climate and soil which is suitable for the cultivation of variety of crops. All the important crops ranging from temperate to tropical are grown here, but we find that there is a tendency for certain crops to concentrate themselves in particular tracts, as the cotton and the jowar crops in the black cotton soil tract, and Arika nut in the sheltered valleys of Shimoga, Malnad. Coffee in the districts of Kadur and Hassan, and so on. This differences is in the kind of crop grown and in the several agricultural practices are associated with differences in climate and soil. Several kinds of crops are grown here, such as rice, Arika nut, sugar cane, ragi, pulses, coffee, jowar, mulberry, oil seeds, bajra, groundnuts, etc. Mysore is an important agricultural country, and more than 70% of the population depends mainly on agriculture. Tipu tried to promote agriculture. Farmers were given special concessions and their difficulties were considered by the government. Dairy farming, like agriculture, was very important in Mysore. A regular dairy farming introduced by Chikka Devaraja was improved by Haider and Tipu and named this department as Amrit Mahal. This was in charge of government establishment of sheep, cows and buffalo. The assessment of land depended on the locality and fertility of the soil and also upon its gross yield. Another basis of assessment was the sowing capacity of a unit of land used for wet crops. On dry land, the number of ploughs required for tilling the soil was taken into account. For the measurement of land, Dera Sultani was in use. The wet land were assessed at 2 to 12 pagodas per candy and dry lands from 2.5 to 30 pagodas per candy. Sugar was taxed from 16 to 72 pagodas per candy. This was the practice followed by Haider Ali and Tipu in the districts of Bangalore and Madhugiri. But in Chitradurga, the rates were different to the lands that were irrigated by well. Tipu granted as much dry lands to the Rayats as could be cultivated by one plough. The grains from the districts of Mysore and Srirangapatnam were stored in the capital. Page 41. As head of the district, the Amil was required to promote agriculture and protect the peasants from exploitation. At the end of every year, he toured the district under his charge and examined the area under cultivation. He had to prepare a general statement regarding the district, giving the number of villages it contained, the area of land cultivated, and the number of peasants with their families, their caste and occupations. Before Tipu's rule, the revenue used to be collected and sent to Srirangapatna by intermediaries who were mostly sahukars, money lenders, and who charged the commission for it. This was a defective system because it caused unnecessary expenditure and at the same time encouraged the money lenders to exploit the peasants. Tipu therefore abolished it and began to employ his own revenue officers for collecting the transmitting the revenue to the capital. The month of Ramzan for every year was fixed for the inspection of the balances and dues. It was ordered that the accounts were to be prepared and transmitted to the department in the month of Shaban. 10.2.4 Finance. Tipu's management of state revenue was an attractive as his way of finding resources to state coffers. The head of the revenue department was also in charge of the finance department. His financial administration was efficient. He showed personal interest in the functioning of the financial transactions and financial reforms. Thanks to the keen interest of the Sultan towards the revenue and finance of the state, things worked smoothly and efficiently. He also brought out coins and currency, and these coins were also aesthetically good-looking to mark the culture and the taste of Sultan. Tipu's love of innovations was best exhibited in his coins. He struck gold, silver and copper coins in his own coins. The initial letter of his father's name, H, was inscribed. He issued 7 kinds of silver coins, namely Haidari, 2 rupees, Imami, 1 rupee, Abidi, half rupee, Baqiri, quarter rupee, Jafari, 1/8 of a rupee, Kaimi, 1/6 of a rupee, and Khizri, 1/32 of a rupee. Among these coins, the 2 rupee coin was more attractive than any coin ever struck in India. He also issued 5 kinds of copper coins, namely Osmani, double paisa, Zohra, paise, Babran, half paise, Akhtar, 1/4 of a paise, and Quatur, 1/8 of a paise. Tipu Sultan, in his new coins, he inscribed thus, "The faith of Ahmad is proclaimed to the world by the victors of Haider." He knew coins were dated in the Mauludu era, beginning with the birth of the Prophet Jalu in 1199 Hijri. On the reverse side, it was written thus, "He is the only Sultan, just one." Some of his coins were dated both in Hijri and Mauludu eras. He issued 4 kinds of coins, namely Mohar or Ahmadi, equal to the value of 4 pagodas, half Mohar or Siddiqui, 2 pagodas, quarters Mohar or Faruqi, 3.5 rupee, Fanam, 1/10 of a pagoda. It was the lowest denomination of Tipu's gold coin. He called it as Rahati. This coin was considerably circulation in South India. In spite of its small size, these coins were minted in Srirangapatnam, Dharwar, Calicut, Firokh and Digal. Page 42. 10.2.5 Judicial. The administration of justice was simple and suited to the spirit of the time. Being the ultimate source of authority, the Sultan was bound to do what was just. Justice in his case consisted of keeping promises, being merciful and giving everyone his share according to law. The Sultan had the habit of visiting his subjects in disguise and inspected their conditions with his own eyes. Disputes were decided in the villages by the Patels with the help of the Panchayats. In the town, the Asifs, Amils and Faujdars performed judicial duties. Besides, each town had a Qazi and a Pandit who decided cases for the Muslims and the Hindus respectively. The officers of the law were the Qazi or judges of the common law. The Qazi of Srinangapatna was the chief Qazi of Tipu's kingdom. The Qazi were posted in the different towns of the kingdom were under his control. The Asafs, Amils and Faujdars dealt out the justice in the town. Each town had a Qazi and a Pandit who decided the causes of dissatisfaction with the judgment of these courts. An appeal could be made to High Court at Srirangapatna, which considered of a Muslim and Hindu judge. But Tipu Sultan was the highest court of appeal. In villages, the Patels dealt out the justice with the help of the village panchayat. Tipu's judicial administration was methodical. He expected that the courts should try the offenders and written records of all the trials should be made and available for every punishment. There should be a provision for an appeal. There should be time gap to pass the final judgment. Though he was lenient at the time of trial procedures in judiciary, he advocated that no mercy should be shown after the final judgment. He said no man shall be punished save in accordance with law. The law of immemorial custom and an enshrined in our traditions shall be honored by us so that people may know the extent and rigor of the law, as also their rights, duties, obligations and responsibilities. During this period, the punishment imposed for criminals was very severe. The cheaters and the murderers were hanged. The common punishment given to the thieves, defaulters and traitors was cutting the different parts of their body. Similarly, the government officials did not escape from the punishment for their disobedience and laziness. In spite of this, he pardoned traitors who betrayed him to his enemies, the British, because they had done noble service to the kingdom of Mysore. When his minister opposed his decision, he said that they were once ready to give their lives for the sake of his father and the kingdom of Mysore. Thus, Tipu was given weight to justice. Page 43. 10.2.6 Military. Tipu Sultan's military was well organized and better equipped. Tipu Sultan, whose one passion of life was to see his country freed from foreign domination, took into account the superiority of Western arms, military organization, and principles of strategy. From his experience of warfare and also from the knowledge of what had happened elsewhere, he came to the conclusion that his own army was to be organized on Western lines, without which there were little chances of success. Thus, he introduced radical reforms in the organization and training of his army, which enabled him to fight against the British. Tipu possessed a regular standing army which was better equipped and disciplined and more used to war than that of the Nizam or the Marathas. His regular cavalry was armed with carbines and swords. His cavalry were no martingales, and this was a distinction by which the English could recognize them from the cavalry of Nizam and Marathas. Tipu's irregular horse were also the most useful troop. Tipu's army was armed like European troops with muskets and bayonets. He possessed large number of English and French arms, but preference was given homemade weapons. His field guns were generally cast in Mysore. The infantry was disciplined after the European manner with Persian and Turkish words of commands. Its dress consists of a jacket of cotton of a mixed purple color with a tiger stripes, with red of yellow turbans, short loose trousers. Tipu Sultan was his own commander-in-chief. He obtained recruits for his army not only from Mysore but also from the neighboring kingdoms. Muslim fakirs, Brahmins and merchants were exempted from the military services. The soldiers recruited in Mysore were called Zumra and were given green turbans with a reddish border, while those recruited from outside the kingdom were called Ghair Zumra and their turbans were wholly green. During the early period of Tipu's rule, the Mysore army was divided into kushuns, risalas, and jokes. Each kushun was commanded by a sipahdar and had a bakshi and mutsadis attached to it. At the head of each risala was a risaldar, and at the head of each jok was a jokdar. Next in rank were the sarkhils, the jamadars, the dafadars, and the yazakdars. After the Treaty of Srirangapatna in 1792, he deprived Tipu, which deprived Tipu of half of his kingdom. He was compelled to reduce his army, but the mistake which he made was that he not only reduced his infantry, but also his cavalry. The result was that although he was still strong enough to beat the combined forces of the Nizam and the Marathas, he could no longer confront the British. The responsible officers of the military department were the Sipadar of the Kushuns, the Risaldars of the Risala, Jukdars of the Juks, Sarkhil, Jamadar, Yazadar, Yasakchi, Saryasakchi of the Kushun, Mangala Nishan, Mangale Pish, Mangale Akle Khaiwan, etc. The army was divided into infantry, cavalry, regular horses, and elephants. Page 44. A large portion of army was made up of foot soldiers. The next important division of the army was the cavalry. Elephants were of great use, and the artillery based on European model. The general administration of the army was carried on by the Mir Miran department. After the Treaty of Srirangapatna, a separate department was formed to look after the troops recruited from among the inhabitants of the Mysore kingdom. The Mir Sardar department was responsible for inspecting the defences of the forts and for supplying the latter with provisions, war materials and troops, but so far as matters relating to military policy were concerned, these were decided by the Sultan himself, who was his own commander-in-chief. A separate register was kept in which a full record of all members of the army, including a description of their physical features, was noted down. Emphasis was laid down on the regular payment of salaries and on keeping the army in a tip-top condition by means of physical exercise and parades. Armament and ammunitions were looked after with proper care and were supplied promptly and sufficiently. Arrangements were made immediately for repair of the damaged articles. There were regular rules for appointments and promotions. An important principle which had been laid down was that whenever deserved promotion was raised to the next higher officer, for deserving person the promotion was made very quick. There were certain rules for selecting the Sultan and other high-ranking officers. Rules were laid down regarding the firing guns on important occasions. The military administration of Tipu Sultan was well organized and better equipped. The military officers were given due respects. Tipu Sultan was endowed with an exceptional intellect. The idea of reform appealed to him. He was aware of the weakness of military organization and became convinced that it was impossible to achieve success against Western arms unless the outdated and absolute implements of war and methods of warfare were discarded in favor of more scientific and more advanced ones. He did not blindly follow the foreign methods of warfare in his military administration. Tipu possessed great personal courage. He was a skillful general. His personal valor, fearlessly in danger, perseverance, inspired his troops with confidence and enthusiasm. He was very kind to his army and ordered the officers to look after the wounded soldiers with care and to give the soldiers rest after a long march. If they fell in battle, enams were granted to their relatives. The pension were hereditary in some cases. Owing to all these reasons, he was extremely popular with his army. The navy. Hyder Ali had twice attempted to build a navy, but he failed because 1768 was naval commander Stannett had gone over to England, and in second attempt, Sir Edward Hughes destroyed a number of vessels laying in anchor at Mangalore in 1780. Page 45. When Tipu succeeded his father, he did not try to replace the navy destroyed by the English. He possessed a number of vessels, both large and small, but these were only meant to protect Menchantment from pirates, and they were not in a position to make a stand against English navy. It was only towards the last few years of his reign that Tipu directed his attention to the building of navy. In 1796, he organized a board of admiralty under a Mir Yeam. The navy was to consist of 22 line of battle ships and 20 large frigates. For the construction of the ships, 3 dockyards were established, one at Mangalore, one at Wajidabad near Marjan, and third at Molidabad. The models of the vessels were supplied by the Sultan himself. The line of battleships were divided into first and second class, mounting 72 and 62 guns respectively, while the frigates were to carry 46 guns. The whole scheme was undertaken with great zeal, but owing to the capture of Srirangapatna, it could not be realized. 10.3 Social Reforms. To promote the welfare of his people, Tipu also adopted the role of a social reformer. He was very keen in observing the traditions and customs of the country. He condemned the uncivilized habits and customs of the people. He gave importance to character building activities of a younger generation. For instance, when he observed the women folk of a tribe in Malabar walking about in streets with their breasts uncovered, he condemned that habit. He mentioned that it was repugnant to good taste and morality. When Tipu came to know that one of his faujdar, Arshad Beg, had illicit relationship with a courtesan, he advised him to stop the relationship, which shows the Sultan not only wanted his officials to be honest or punctual in their duties, but he also wanted moral tone in their private life. Tipu Sultan also banned prostitution. He forbade the employment of female slaves in domestic service, and he tried to stop the practice of polyandry in his country. According to Mahibul Hasan, Tipu abolished the custom of human sacrifice, which was practiced in the temple of Kali Devi in Mysore. Tipu was the first in South Indian history to enforce prohibition. For instance, he wrote his finance minister Mir Sadiq, who objected to prohibition on the ground of heavy financial loss to the government, "This is a matter in which we must be undeterred and undaunted by financial considerations, height of our people, and the need to build the character of our faith. The health and morality of the people is much important than the treasury of the country." Tipu strictly prohibited the sale of intoxicating drinks in the interest of the public in order to impose prohibition of drinks in his state. He had instructed Monsieur Raleigh, "Thus, you must allow no more than a single shop to be opened in your camp for the vending of spirituous liquor, and over that you must place a guard for a purpose of preventing the sale of spirits to any but the Europeans belonging to you, in being a rule in our victorious army that no shop of this kind shall be permitted to be established." Page 46. He permitted the French commander M. Lally to open a liquor shop, but firmly restricted it to the French soldiers in his service. In 1787, he issued orders to the officials at Bangalore to close the liquor shops. There, he advised those who were in that profession to take up some other jobs. He was thinking that for the social, economic, and moral good of his people, there shall be total prohibition of distilling and selling of liquor. Licenses should be issued for limited quantities, strictly for the sale to foreigners. Tipu Sultan himself was looking after the various departments of the government and engaged right from the morning till evening for the welfare of his subjects. He never pardoned his officials who were inefficient and oppressive. They had to discharge their duties honestly and had to implement all reforms for the upliftment of the subjects. Tipu had high vision about public grievances, for extracting best work from his officers for the public. He had instructed them to be punctual in their office. He strictly warned them not to entertain public in their houses. Another form of public work in which Tipu took special interest was irrigation. According to an inscription in 1797, Tipu constructed a dam near Srirangapatna across the Cauvery and a big tank in Daroch for the welfare of his subjects. He repaired many more tanks such as Moti Talab, etc., which were the water tanks for their cultivator too. By giving funds for the government, Tipu also encouraged his people to build tanks and keep them always in good condition. An inscription in 1790 registers a gift of land to the Gowdas of Hillegala of Nawab Tipu Sultan. He sanctioned numerous grants to help the weaker sections of the society, like orphans, widows, physically handicapped, and other uncared persons for their education and marriage, etc. Thus, Tipu's social reforms benefited all sections of the population. 10.4 Religious Policies. Tipu Sultan was a devoted Muslim and generous patron of all religions. But British writers like Mark Wilkes and Charles Stewart have described Tipu, the intolerant and bigot sultan, who practiced religious discrimination and carried on forcible conversations. But many records of Tipu regime reveals that Tipu was an enlightened and tolerant ruler who considered his religious policy as personal and not the state policy. As a mark of it, Tipu raised the Hindu to high position in his government. Great persons like Puranaiya held the very important post of Mir Asaf, while Subbaraya, Srinivasaraya, Appaji Rama, Narasaiya, Nangappa, Krishna Rao, Moolchand and Shamiyangar were also holding suitable posts in Tipu's government. He granted freedom of worship to them. This is revealed by existence of God Sri Ranganatha temple within the fort of Srirangapatna, very close to the place of Tipu Sultan. Page 47. When the pujas were being offered in the temple, the ringing of the temple bell used to be listened to by Tipu Sultan, but he never interfered in their religious activities. On the other hand, he extended financial assistance to Hindu temples and Brahmins as well as Muslims, Christians, for performing the religious ceremonies. According to Muhibul Hasan, Tipu Sultan reversed saints and conferred grants on their tombs, and he also held Hindu sadhus, saints and gods in great respect. He fed Brahmins and bore the expense of Hindu religious ceremonies performed to invoke success for his arms. According to an archaeological report, Tipu took special interest to safeguard the Sringeri Mutt, which was looted by Maratha raiders in 1791. Tipu felt very sorry by hearing this news and granted 200 rahathi, food grains and clothes to the mutt immediately. If Tipu was a bigot king, he would have never extended his help to the mutt. Another record says in 1785, Tipu granted 12 elephants, gold and silver to the Narayana Swami temple at Melkote. An inscription on 1782 AD registers the gift of 4 silver cups and silver spittoon to God Lakshmi Kantha Swami temple of Kalale. Another inscription from Nang Jungud speaks that Tipu Sultan presenting a large silver plate to the same temple, and he made enormous grants to Prasanna Venkateshwara temple in Mysore. Srirangatha Swami temple in Srirangapatna, Srikanteswara temple at Nanjangud, etc. These gifts and grants proved that the Hindus had received maximum support from Tipu Sultan. Tipu was a Sunni Muslim, but he had inclined towards the Shias. His government was known as the God-given state. Mahibul Hasan says that Tipu had great reverence for Ali and inscribed on his weapon Asadullah ul-Ghalib, one of Ali's titles, and also he revered the other Shia imams and named many of the coins after them. thus Tipu Sultan had given equal importance to the Muslim and Hindu religions. He appointed religious teachers to supervise their domestic morals and teach the true faith. He was one of the kind, after Ashok the Great, to make appointments of officers for supervising religious matters. He believed the words of Quran, "In the garden of wisdom bloom many flowers, but they all bear within their fragrant hearts that nectar of one immortal love," and likewise, "It is with all the different religions in the world." He maintained the principle of unity and humanity and brotherhood of mankind. Thus Tipu was not a bigot, but the enlightened king who had encouraged all religious alike. That he treated his non-Muslim subjects of Malabar harshly cannot be denied, but this was not due to their religion, but because of their refractory conduct. Page 48. 10.5 Economy. Many historians and scholars like Professor M. H. Gopal, Professor B. Sheikh Ali, and others in their works have analyzed the economy and financial position which Mysore enjoyed during Tipu's regime. They have critically evaluated the financial position of Mysore. According them, total value of the revenue of Mysore during this time was 68,22,800 Kanti Raya pagodas. Professor M. H. Gopal claims that the underestimation of revenue done by Tipu Sultan after the Srirangapatna Treaty in 1792 proved profitable not only to him but to the English company and the sufferers were the Nizam of Hyderabad and Marathas. Although the Treaty of Srirangapatna curtailed the economic and military sources of Tipu within a few years, he succeeded in making his kingdom strong and prosperous. Agricultural industry and trade and commerce are the mainsprings of the Mysore economy under Tipu Sultan. With the encouragement of agriculture, trade and commerce, industry and artisans, the economy of the Mysore kingdom became progressive and prosperous. The wars and conquests have filled the state treasury with immense wealth. This helped to a large extent in establishing a sound economy in Mysore. Along with the plundered resources, the Sultan was also receiving tributes from the conquered territories and rent from those areas where the traditional chieftains had not compromised. 10.5.1 Agriculture. Agriculture was a common feature of Tipu's kingdom. He believed that agriculture was the heart of the country. In order to protect the interests of the farmers, he had appointed an amil who was district chief and had to protect the farmers from exploitation to promote agriculture. He had to travel throughout the district to measure the cultivated land. The land revenue used to be fixed only after he submitted the report on the basis of the nature and quantity of the crops grown. Amil had to take necessary steps to safeguard the interest of the farmers. Agricultural implements like plough, etc. were supplied by the government for agricultural purpose, which prevented the exploitation by the landlords and local officers. Tipu Sultan was very much keen that his taxpayers should not be harassed in any way. So the land revenue was collected from the farmers through installments. During drought conditions, the rent had to be reduced or altogether waived. Tipu issued 127 revenue codes. He instructed his officials to encourage and help all the peasants and thus improve the agricultural productions. He said to his officers, "The 127 regulations of revenue codes are intended for your immediate implementation." Page 49. In particular, your attention is drawn to the provisions which relate to cash advances to needy peasants for buying plough, steps for taking over derelict land and protection to the cultivator and his descendants. Tipu gave general instructions to the farmers that all lands should be cultivated or else the lands would be confiscated. The rent was to be calculated on the productivity of the land and the living conditions of the peasants. he instructed his officials that they should rely on the social conditions of the people without ignoring their rights. As long as the peasants pay the land revenue and as long as he exploits the land, till then the right over that land was given to the peasant. Much encouragement was given to the cultivation of all food crops, including sugarcane, wheat, and barley. Many tanks were dug to facilitate agriculture along with a number of channels. 10.5.2 Trade and Commerce. Trade and commerce also is an important factor for the growth of economy in any country. Generally, the merchant community controlled most of the trade and commerce of the period. Foreign traveler Buchanan and other writers have analyzed the trade from different perspectives. The intervention of state in trade and commercial activities were criticized because of the projected huge profit which the state later pocketed. Dr. Ashok Sen, an historian who had studied the commerce of this period, analyzed thoroughly commercial regulations which were existing then. Few Indian rulers in the past were so much interested in the promotion of trade and commerce and industry as was Tipu Sultan. Influenced by the example of the European powers, he alone realized that a country could be great and powerful only by developing its trade and commerce and industry. Therefore, he tried to promote the trade of his kingdom by establishing factories like Europeans. Tipu Sultan can be considered as the first among the Indian rulers who considered the importance of building merchant navy on modern lines. During this time, Bangalore, Mysore and Srirangapatna had emerged as great centers of trade and commercial activities. Sirsi developed as a market center for betel nut and cotton. To encourage the foreign trade, Tipu established depots in different parts of his kingdom, which were 30 in number. Some of them were located in Srirangapatna, Bangalore, Bidanur, Shikharipur, Sonda, Mulbagilu, Madanapalli, Gurramkonda, Punganur, Chitradurga, Kolar, Satyamangala, Bhatkala, Jamalabad, Calicut, Banavasi, and Nandidurga. Supervisors and other officials were appointed to administer these depots. These depots not only looked after wholesale trade but also traded with the consumers. In other words, the state during this time even intervened in international trade. The intention of Tipu was to keep away from profitable commercial goods from the hand of the colonialists, especially the British. The intention of Tipu was to make the state as a chief seller, and by doing so, he accumulated huge profit. Page 50. In 1793 AD, Tipu ordered building of 100 ships in order to facilitate seaborne trade. These ships were built by making use of locally available raw materials like iron, wood, rope, and other essentials. Mangalore and Sadashivagadh were the two important shipbuilding centers of the time. He had studied the structure of the navy of the Portuguese, the Dutch, the French, and the English. On the basis of his vision and perception, he remodeled his own navy, which included ships of different size and designs. He tried to collaborate his idea of industrialization with that of trade and commerce. Especially the intention of his industries policy was to enhance the process of industrialization in Mysore. Though his father Hyder Ali had showed much interest due to paucity of time, he could not accelerate his process. Tipu, as said earlier, wanted to resist the expansionist and colonial policy of the British. Secondly, he gave much encouragement to the production of goods in great demand like sugar, cotton, cloth, and silk. Because of this, gradually trade and other related professions came to replace agriculture very slowly. He also established trading centers at Kutch, Muscat, Pegu, Hormuz, and Jeddah. He also took initiative to establish such commercial centers in Basra and Aden. He not only developed commercial contacts with China, but also tried to build trade relations with France, Turkey, and Iran. He encouraged American merchants to settle in Mysore. With much initiatives, he established a trade company to supervise the export trade of Mysore with shares collected from merchants. With regard to foreign trade, in order to strike at strict discipline and control over trade, several commercial agents were employed in such of the places where maritime trade was conducted and at places where commercial factories were established. In addition to this, there prevailed a bureaucracy which consisted of what called as Daroga, brackets, commercial consul, close bracket, the Mutsudis or accountants and the Gumasthas or commercial agents. They were to carry out the trading operations and keep accounts. The Daroga was briefed by the Sultan regarding the purchase and sale of the goods. Vigorous punishment were to be given if any of the officers involved themselves in fraud or malpractice. Tipu monopolized trading articles like sandalwood, betel nut, pepper, cardamom, etc. Since they brought enormous profit to Sultan, the Sultan laid strict rules and regulations regarding the collection of the duties from it and export of such items. Though trade was carried on with strict vigilance of the commercial board to boost foreign trade, private merchants were encouraged to come down to Mysore. They were offered solid concessions and the ports of Mysore were opened to them. Traders from Muscat, Kutch and China came down with their goods to Mysore and were treated with warmth. 17 foreign factories, bracket, including Muscat and Kutch, close bracket, were planned to be established in Kurnool, Madras, Pondicherry, page 51. Pune, Kudafa, Tanjore, Maligny, Kothe, belonging to Rustesia, Hunabad, depending on Hyderabad, Karachi, Bandar of Sindh and Mahe Bandar under the French rule. The board was authorized to spend such sums as would appear necessary and proper for the purpose of the factories. One more important aspect of Tipu's commercial regulations was the ban on trade with all his enemies and especially with the British. So he embarked on declaring an embargo specially against the British. Trading with Madras and Nizam was completely stopped. The blockade hit the English hard. The English, who depended largely on Malabar pepper, were affected by his blockade. Several commercial depots and stores were set up by the government. In fact, the government fixed prices for it. These depots were established not only in Mysore, but also in Malabar, Coimbatore, and other conquered territories as well. These depots received various commodities such as pepper, betel nut, cardamoms, tobacco, etc., prices being fixed by the government. This was one major step in the introducing state capitalism. Tipu wanted the state to be ultimate benefactor. Apart from this, he wanted to prevent the colonial hold on not only the trade of Mysore, but also on the people. Tipu Sultan engaged Frenchmen, English prisoners of war and European deserts to introduce European arts and crafts and mode of production in his country. He himself used the articles manufactured in Mysore and advised his officers to do the same in order to encourage home industries. Tipu Sultan wrote to Ottoman Sultan to send him craftsmen who could help in the development of industries in his kind. Tipu Sultan did his utmost to secure craftsmen and technicians from abroad. For this purpose, he sent embassies to France, Constantinople, Iran, Muscat, and other places. 10.5.3 Industries. A large number of factories established by the Sultan indicated the incentive taken by him to promote industries and manufactures. But it was strictly the Sultan's own manufactories. Though there existed quite a few factories run by the individuals, yet they had to depend on the Sultan again for funds. Here again, they were strictly under the control of officers appointed by the government. Tipu took equal interest in promoting textile industry. His dominion was self-sufficient in respect of cotton cloth requirement. Every variety of cloth from the finest, which was called book muslin, to khadar, was manufactured in Mysore. Mysore city was an important textile center. Gubbi was known for saris. Satyamangal had as many as 800 looms. Coimbatore was yet another center. Harihar was famous for yarn. Vellore was important textile center. Mysore is famous for silk industry. Its salubrious climate was highly conclusive for this industry. Tipu promoted this industry to a great extent. He had established 21 centers in his dominions. Tipu used to buy a small tax on every loom. Page 52. The kingdom was full of skilled craftsmen like goldsmiths, carpenters, masons, ironsmiths, potters, and leather workers who continued hereditary skills in each field. Woodwork may be mentioned among other important handicrafts of the period. Production processes had become sufficiently advanced in Mysore by the end of the 18th century. At Channapatna, glassware was processed first by blowing up masses of glass from the raw articles and then by molding them into small bottles and ornamental rings for the arms of women. Different glasses articles such as bangles, beads, mirrors, dishes, bowls and spittooms were in use. Iron melting and casting were done at various places such as Madhugiri, Channaraya Durga, Magalwadi and Devaraya Durga. Iron was found at Duregudu and Chikkadevabetta. Tipu was well aware of the importance of this industry. Srirangapatna factory produced guns, muskets, cannons, knives, scissors, cutlery and watches. Tipu had named his iron factories as Taramandal, which were four in number at Srirangapatna, Bangalore, Chitradurga and Bednur. Sugar and jaggery were prepared in some places around the capital of Srirangapatna, where sugarcane was grown in large quantity. In Devanahalli, taluk sugar of a superior quality was manufactured with the help of the Chinese brought there on Tipu's orders. Tipu took interest in promoting other industries as well. He was very fond of pearl industry. Paper mill at Srirangapatna. Ammunition factories at Bednur produced 20,000 muskets and guns every year. Gunpowder was manufactured at Mysore. In Mysore, the Kolar gold fields were famous. Tanning was done in several places. Oil extraction was common. 10.6 Summary of the Unit. Tipu Sultan's son and successor of Haider Ali was born in 1749 AD. He had dignified appearance and was of known complexion. He had splendid health. He dressed simply but elegantly and enjoyed simplicity on his courtiers as well. Like other Indian rulers, Tipu Sultan was an autocrat. Though he consulted his chief civil and military officers on important matters, but he was not bound by their advice and the final decision always rested with him. He was the supreme legislature, judicial and executive authority in his kingdom. He was his own foreign minister and personally dedicated all important correspondence. He was also his own commander-in-chief. During wars, he commanded the principal army and all the generals that to act according to his instructions. He was the highest court of appeal and dealt out justice to the rich and poor alike. Page 53. Tipu Sultan had a spirit of innovation and curiosity. A new calendar, new scale of weights and measures, new coinage engaged his attention. Thomas Munro, when he summed up his career in 1799, said, "Open inverted commas, a restless spirit of innovation and a wish to have everything to originate from himself was the predominant feature of his character, close inverted commas. He was fond of introducing novelty in all matters. He abolished the Muslim calendar with its years because it was administratively inconvenient and introduced instead calendar based on lunisolar year. For the lunisolar, he gave the months from the Persian according to the system of numeration. Tipu occupies a unique place in the annals of Mysore. He endowed the kingdom with a strong and well-settled government and promoted the welfare and prosperity of the people. A patriot, an intrepid soldier, a tireless conqueror, a skillful diplomat, an astute statesman, and one of the great rulers history had produced. The form of government was paternal. The Sultan was not only the highest temporal authority, but was the shadow of God upon earth. He was the source of entire administrative law. There was no written law. Thus, the authority of the Sultan was unlimited in theory, and the entire machinery of government derived its momentum from him. Tipu Sultan's government, though strict and arbitrary, was the despotism of a politic and able sovereign. 10.7 Self-Assessment Questions. Question 1. Explain the administration under Tipu Sultan's reign. Question 2. Explain state capitalism in Mysore under Tipu Sultan. Question 3. Explain Tipu's drive towards modernization of Mysore. 10.8 Suggested books for further study. Book 1. History of Mysore, Volume 3 by Hayavadana Rao C. Book 2. History of Tipu Sultan by Mohibul Hasan. Book 3. Basavaraja K.R. The book is History and Culture of Karnataka. Book 4. Tipu Sultan by Dr. Sheikh Ali B. Book 5. Karnataka Samraga Charitre by Dr. Sheikh Ali, Dr. Mahadevi.